Welcome to Planet Upload. Planet Upload is a weekly podcast that takes an unfiltered look at the creator ecosystem, online video, and the social media landscape. I'm Lauren Schnipper, creator and online video expert.
And I am Joshua Cohen, co-founder of TubeFilter and the Streamy Awards.
Streamy Awards? Josh, stop there. You know, this is so typical of you. I think the audience should get to know something about you. The week something happens, like the day, you don't like to... We didn't talk, the Streamy Awards nominations came out last week, Josh, and you didn't talk about it. You might ask, well, Lauren, why didn't you ask me about it? I don't pay attention to you, Josh. Like, that's not fair. You know what I mean?
I'm not going to ask myself my own questions here.
Well, you could say, like, this is a big week for me. Let's move. Well,
What's the point of having a co-host?
Don't put your stuff on me. Don't project. Tell me about the Streamy Awards nomination. First of all, obviously, like everything else, Streamy Awards are going to be digital this year. Tell me about the Streamy Awards nomination. What's going on? I want to hear everything.
We announced the nominees last Thursday. Honestly, I was blown away by the reception. I'm not just saying that from like PR speak or hyping this up.
Uh-huh.
I feel like we usually put out the nominations announcements on the Streamy Awards handle, and things will get like maybe several hundred likes, maybe several hundred retweets. And this year we have some of these posts that have thousands of likes, thousands of retweets.
Wow.
And I think it just speaks to this kind of new creator class that has grown up with the Streamy Awards over the past 10 years. This will be the 10th year anniversary of it. That
big deal, 10 years.
Yeah, totally. That is really stoked and excited about this. So it was really cool to see.
Any surprises in terms of nominations? Any that surprised you?
I don't kind of look at it as surprises. I mean, there are definitely people in there that I haven't heard of before, have only heard of in passing, that now I'm going to pay more attention to. And it can be a discovery mechanism for people. And that's what was cool about going through some of the tweets, too. Well, you'll see people that say, like, oh, my God, I love everyone in this category, except I've never heard of this person. I'm going to go check them out now.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kinds of things that I love to see, because that's what really we created the Streamy Awards for, was to just shine a bigger spotlight on the ecosystem, on all the cool creators that are making stuff within it. And so it's really exciting to see that discovery process through some of the creators themselves, and definitely the audience and the fans, and also that creators are hyped on it. It was really awesome.
So when are they this year?
They're in December. Check out for updates on streamies.org. It's going to be a good show.
I know. I'm really excited. I mean, I'm very excited to see what you guys are doing. I know you've been hard at work. Sometimes you don't answer the phone when you're working on Streamy's things. And I just want to say, they better be good. Moving on. Before we get into the stories, we do have another guest this week, which is very exciting. His name is Matt Belinsky. He is a lawyer in the space in Los Angeles, and very notably represented David Dobrik in his recent $4 million raise for Dispo. So he's going to get into that and trends that he's seeing around creators building businesses, which is obviously something that we love to talk about. So we'll talk to Matt Belinsky in a little bit. First up, TikTok is just announced a partnership with Shopify where you're going to be able to link up your Shopify with your TikTok. It's not out to everybody yet, but it will be soon, anybody that has a Shopify account. And they're going to have different tools, like you're going to be able to track sales conversions with like a pixel. You're going to be able to create native shareable ads with TikTok's tools. And merchants who integrate will receive a $300 ad credit to jumpstart their campaigns. And this is really exciting. So here's the one thing, though. Satish Kanwar, Vice President of Product at Shopify, said, "We are thrilled to be the first partner to welcome TikTok to the world of commerce, particularly right now, as our merchants prepare for a busy online holiday shopping season." Satish, that's not true. Satish has forgotten that Teespring was the first partner to integrate into commerce, into TikTok. So I take a little bit of issue with that. That was in the blog post. I think that's interesting. I think this is huge. I think this is exciting. Everybody kind of knew that this was happening, but they are not the first, friends. They are not.
Is there some kind of nuance there where they're actually the first of something with this?
Probably. But I mean, who's gonna look into the nuance? I mean, he literally said first partner to welcome TikTok to the world of commerce. That's not true.
Yeah,
it's just not true.
Yeah, that's fair. And then full disclosure, props to you for backing up one of the people you're working with.
Yes, I am. I know this because I worked on the deal to partner Teespring with TikTok, and so you know, my own personal bias aside, or including or with or without my own personal bias, I can say categorically, that's not true, but that's not the point. This is really exciting.
Totally. It's super exciting. I think Shopify has just been an absolute beast over the past 9 months since this pandemic started, especially. I mean, its stock price back in March was $466 per share, and now it's up to over $1,000 per share. So 2.5x its market cap in the past 9 months or so. And that's because of lots of partnerships like this, which is emblematic and just the next step in the evolution of how they're partnering with like all these influencers, all these different creators, basically anyone. Shopify obviously makes it really easy for anyone to sell whatever they want, kind of arm everyone in the world with the ability to sell their own goods.
100%.
On one side, we have Amazon and Google Shopping wants to be this, and YouTube perhaps wants to be this, where they want to be these central locuses of where all consumer spending happens. And Shopify is on the other end, where, like Blake Robbins has said, they're arming the rebels. They want everyone to be able to sell their own stuff and make it stupid easy in order for them to do so. And so being integrated into TikTok is vastly important for a couple reasons. One, it gives everybody on TikTok the ability to sell their own goods and through the platform itself. And that's just another distribution mechanism for all the individual stores of all these influencers. And two, all the tracking capabilities it has. Mm-hmm. This opens up a whole slew of possibilities in different kinds of collaborations between brands and influencers, or other products and influencers, or perhaps influencers in and amongst themselves. I mean, there's a whole ecosystem on Shopify of different plugins and different apps, and lots of them have to do with influencer tracking. So you can figure out your discount codes, your affiliate marketing codes, et cetera, so that brands can track the activity and how much revenue and value these influencers are bringing to the table. Having that integrated into TikTok itself, I mean, I think that's just a huge game changer and really flattens out some of the speed bumps on this path to having more seamless relationships between brands and influencers, and also influencers being able to track where their sales are coming from and the brands being able to do that too. It's an incredible partnership, and I think it's going to lead to a lot of revenue, obviously on the Shopify end and definitely on the creators end as well.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's safe to say this is going to be the first of many kind of creator focused initiatives that Shopify does. Just a couple months ago, John Wexler, the former general manager of Yeezy at Adidas, joined as their VP of their Shopify's creator and influencer program. So I saw that a couple months ago and I was very intrigued because I think, you know, obviously there's so much hype and interesting stuff that was done around Yeezy, and I'm just so interested about what he's going to do with creators in Shopify. I really think this is the tip of the iceberg. I think more interesting integrations and things like this are going to happen. And I think, to your point, I think it's going to be a massive revenue driver for...
And to be fair, just like Shopify's on YouTube too, but the experience there seems lacking.
Yes.
It seems janky.
Correct.
Also, people go to YouTube for kind of entertainment purposes. YouTube's trying to shift that. They want it to become more of a shopping destination as well, or at least you're going there for entertainment purposes and now you can possibly shop, and they want to enhance that experience further. Mm-hmm. But TikTok just seems like a more natural fit for these types of purchases from the people you're watching.
And they're doing this kind of work really early on. Like, if you think about it, you know, YouTube's over a decade in, and trying to then add these kind of functionalities is a little bit more difficult in terms of like UI and product capabilities and stuff like that. You've got TikTok, you know, in its early, early days, thinking about how to integrate this into the platform in a much more seamless, it just will be much more seamless because they're doing it so much earlier in the process. Like, no, YouTube wasn't thinking about, I mean, YouTube was like a place where you uploaded your like weird short film, like, you know, 10 years ago. Like, you know what I mean? It wasn't even in the realm. And now, you know, TikTok obviously has the benefit of seeing this space grow and being really successful in it quickly. And they are moving so much quicker into these kind of categories. And so it will just, I think by, you know, I think it'll just be a better experience because I think they're just going to be able to be more nimble right now, right? When you're smaller and you're younger and you're more hungry, you can just be more nimble and you can change things and make them better quicker. So I think that's also really exciting. They have the advantage of seeing what happened in the past. Okay, great. Moving on. Next up, Broadband TV goes public on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Broadband TV, or BBTV, They define themselves as they provide end-to-end management, distribution, and monetization solutions to content owners across a range of leading services. They provide content production, distribution, management, and monetization services to digital creators. They're effectively one of the only MCNs that actually has been incredibly successful and is still around and people want to work with. Would you agree with that, Josh?
Totally. I think it's kind of an anomaly now. When you think of MCN, you usually think of it as a bad word, but BBTV seems to actually be doing good business.
And noted, there's no, I did not see on their website any word like MCN, multi-channel. That's not a word that anybody uses anymore.
Totally.
So they, yeah.
Totally agree. I think they prefer being called a digital network or some other name rather than MCN for sure. But just to get into the numbers, back in 2013, BBTV raised $36 million U.S. dollars for a 51% share of the company from RTL, which was a Luxembourg-based entertainment conglomerate. They also invested in other MCNs like Style Hall. And then for this IPO, they've actually bought out RTL. And the IPO, they hope to raise $172 million Canadian with it, and they have a market cap of 300 million Canadian, which is 224 million US dollars. So if you take their valuation from 2013, where RTL bought them for 36 million, that's around $72 million valuation. Now they're at 224, so 3x that or so in 7 years. Mm-hmm. Not bad, especially not bad for a company kind of in a market that people have maybe negative connotation towards generally. But broadband TV has been doing really good stuff for its clients. It's been building mobile apps that have been incredibly successful. Just had a conversation with Chad, Wild, Clay, and V, who together get over 300 to 400 million views a month across their three or four YouTube channels.
I love Chad and V.
And
what,
so
what are you talking to Chad and V about? Broadband TV, just drop that in.
Broadband TV built an app for them.
They did?
Yeah, they built a gaming app that's been incredibly successful.
Well, I think, but that was a while ago, right?
Or
yeah,
recently? It still is. But just talking about the other types of services that are traditionally like outside the kind of like confines that you would think an MCN would do, that they're doing for some of their creators seem to be hyped.
Yeah. I mean, they're doing merch, they're doing plushies, they're doing all sorts of, you know, CPG products. And so, I think it seems like they're delivering. And I mean, it really, the only reasons why MCN became a bad word is because the majority of them overpromised and either underdelivered or didn't deliver. And so and creators signed these deals with them, giving them huge pieces of their ad revenue with the expectations they'd get anything from brand deals to massive amounts of brand deals to, you know, traditional content deals, like et cetera, and it's like kind of nothing ever happened. And then of course a lot of these MCNs ended up having to do minimum guarantees, and then it just bled them dry. And so it's always fascinating to find someone in the space who didn't do all of that and they are still around and thriving.
Totally. And shout out to Shahrzad Rafati. She's the CEO of Broadband TV. And she's on lots of different types of committees and different boards and different organizations in the Canadian government. So I think it's probably a big win for her and important for her that they went on the Toronto Stock Exchange in Canada just to show some national pride there. And also,
do you think that's part of the reason that they maybe didn't do some of this stuff is because they were based? I mean, based in Canada. I mean, they definitely work with American creators, and I've seen them at VidCon many times. So it's not like they're not penetrating this country. But I wonder if like being in Canada.
I was just going to say that that's 100% the reason why.
You think so?
Or at least that's what they say. Like, we were talking to them about some business deals long ago, probably around like 2012, 2013, 2014. Mm-hmm. And this was around the time when like MCN started to become like people started to become wary of them, right? Mm-hmm. And started getting like crazy investment, crazy valuations, etc. And they were like, yeah, but we're a Canadian company. Mm-hmm. We kind of have like a level head on our shoulders, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas Americans can kind of get a little zany. We're just a little bit more level headed. So kind of
zany, the Canadian word for insane.
Don't worry.
For out of your effing mind. Okay.
Don't have the same concerns you have for them that you have for us, because we're just a different breed.
Got it. Okay, cool. Love it. Congratulations to them. All right, so we are going to get to our interview with Matt Belinsky now. Okay, Welcome, Matt Belinsky. Matt, I'm going to give you a little intro before we get started. Matt is a transactional attorney and startup advisor based in Los Angeles, guiding the emerging technology, media, and apparel consumer products clients with transactional matters ranging from early stage financing to corporate governance, employment and production, licensing, distribution, and commercialization. He very notably repped Pluto TV as outside general counsel, and Pluto TV, of course, was sold to Viacom for $340 million. No big deal. He also reps numerous influencer and celebrity-backed merchandise lines, which is what we're going to kind of get into: apparel, jewelry, beauty, cosmetics, nutrition, supplements. And also incredibly notably and relevant to our podcast, Matt served as the head of business and legal affairs for leading multi-channel network Awesomeness TV after its sale to DreamWorks. So we're so excited to have you here, Matt. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I should also note that you have an amazing social media presence, which we can shout out at the end too, but you are very prolific on the Instagram. So
prolific would be the word. Much appreciated.
So you're welcome. So let's just get right into it. Well, let's talk about your kind of the work you do generally with, like, specifically around influencers and creators, and what you're kind of seeing as a high level trend in this space in terms of influencers, like, sort of starting businesses. We'd love to start there.
Sure. So I do, you know, I do a lot of work with influencers, kind of finding new lines of business, new revenue streams, and building the kind of either product, whether it be physical product or software businesses, off their persona or the platforms that they have built, more so than, you know, necessarily their on camera or their video, you know, or their video content activities. Although I do represent them, I do some brand deals and some of the deals related to, you know, how they're producing content, getting paid for sponsors and brands.
And so very, very notably, you were representing, I believe, David Dobrik, if I'm correct, in this sort of whole deal that they just did, raising $4 million dollars for Dispo. So can you talk a little bit how you got involved? And I'd love to understand, like, the nuance specifically around, like, you know, Dobrik is huge, but, like, you know, he's not necessarily, like, known as, like, a tech founder. So, like, what was that like trying to raise money with, like, a creator and yeah, how you got involved?
Sure. That's actually, you know, very interesting trajectory there. So David, you know, he's a savant. Content-wise, just his instincts are second to none. He's just has a likability level that's off the charts. Some people, you know, referred to him the Jimmy Fallon of Gen Z. an interesting way to put it. Bottom line being, an incredibly likable guy that shines through in his content, and it helped him really create. He kind of created escape velocity from the other pack of notable, but maybe, you know, in determining who is going to be the true A-list of the YouTube and Instagram creators. David distinguished himself from the crowd. Mm-hmm. And he had been obviously someone who's got that type of following. You're positioned very well to start building businesses and opening up new lines of income. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, a lot of people in that position would do something more traditional. Apparel, well, obviously he's done a lot with FanJoy, and they've done a great mm-hmm. job on executing on quote-unquote merch, but it wasn't necessarily a brand built around David. The first one of those actually was recently a men's fragrance business yep. that he decided to start building. But mm-hmm. once again, product, more traditional. Mm-hmm. Contrast that with a software platform. And this is another thing that just came to David instinctually. He had an affinity for disposable cameras. He started an account just for photos taken on a disposable camera. Mm-hmm. They have a different sheen. They have a different visual effect. And the whole notion is that there's more authenticity because people aren't being as, you know, they're not being as deliberate with the photography because they know they can't post it right away. So there's mm-hmm. some authenticity that shine through there. So we figured, okay, how do I turn my entire phone into a disposable camera? How do I make this a digital recreation of a disposable camera? So just without too much fanfare, he found a developer to turn that app out. They released the app and pretty much just built off just residual from the fact that it was associated with David, got 2 million downloads in his mm-hmm. sleep. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that you can come to some conclusions from that alone. That type of organic adoption, you've got something there. Mm-hmm. A very shrewd individual named Daniel Liss, who is in the venture world, he had identified David as someone that, you know, that has it, and someone that he wanted to work with, you know, quite a while ago. And he was kicking around a number of different potential new businesses built with or on, you know, David's platforms. And he took a look at this and he said, wait a second, you know, we've got something here. This is not just a cute app or a cute feature. Let's call it a feature to the David Dobrik suite of offerings, right? It could just be another piece of content or another kind of brick in his wall. But wait a second. This is a standalone company and a standalone platform. And so he, you know, figured, wait a second, we can treat this like a startup, just like David would be the founder who conceptualized the idea. And, you know, and okay, so and this is where it becomes interesting for future creators in when the product is a software platform, as opposed to going and having to find a jewelry manufacturer or an apparel manufacturer and partner up with someone in that regard. Okay, how do I build a software business? You kind of almost need a co-founder. Mm-hmm. You need someone who knows how to raise money, manage teams, mm-hmm. Knows how to interface with investors, has those relationships with the financial community, yeah. And can kind of play that role. And so Daniel stepped in and took the reins and said, okay, listen, we're not just looking to raise a small seed round. We're going to go out to the top VCs in town. We're going to put some real fuel behind this. And, you know, it was a competitive bidding process, ended up going with Alexis Ohanian, obviously, you know, somewhat due to his track record in understanding, you know, what moves the needle content wise and in creating with Reddit very much more organic conversations. And once the lead was secured, yep. You know, fill that in with other, you know, people who may have strategic value, other interesting creators, yep. People who are going to be real champions of the platform and treating it like a more traditional startup.
Yeah, I think this is so fascinating. I want to just dive into a little bit more because you sort of touch on it. Like, to your point, like what I always say, we're very obsessed with creator diversification and monetization on this sure. podcast, and certainly where my career has been focused on in the last, you know, several years. But I think what you're saying is so true. An idea can be great, but if you don't have the wherewithal to execute it, it's just an idea. And obviously this was more than that because David did build something that got a decent amount of kind of downloads, but, you know, really understanding what your strengths and weaknesses are, and then sure. ideally getting a partner that sort of fills in those blanks. So can you talk a little bit about that and how creators should sort of think about that? Maybe when you've seen it go well and not so well.
Sure. It's not just where your strengths lie, its strengths and talents lies, also where you know that you can make a time commitment, right? Mm-hmm. Theoretically, mm-hmm. I don't know necessarily how successful David would have been in going and trying to deal with investors or other creators that I've worked with, and they probably have some pretty strong executive functions out there. But, mm-hmm. you know what your bread and butter is, right? Mm-hmm. And once again, I think it's interesting to contrast this or at least make the parallels between a software-based business or physical products, right? Someone's going to know, you know, anyone who influencers who want to roll out new fashion lines or new cosmetics lines, like, okay, I need someone to design, you know, they might this is where it does start to creep in and start the creator does start to take on a little more responsibility. Let's say that you do have an idea for a cosmetics line or apparel or fashion or something in that regard. And you want to be more involved in the formulation, the design, and those creative aspects of it. Mm-hmm. Okay. You still know that you need someone on the fulfillment and distribution side, right? Mm-hmm, so you're going to mm-hmm. go find someone who's seasoned, who's got the resources and the experience in that space. And there could be fluctuating degrees of how involved you get in the design, or in the creative process there, even getting a little more technical if you're going to do something in cosmetics, in formulation and ingredients and whatnot. So you don't necessarily have to get that involved. You can mm-hmm. be very hands-off.
Are you seeing the creators want to be that involved or no?
It's really on a case by case basis. There's right. some people, one company, a colleague of mine reps is Millie Bobby Brown, her cosmetics line Florence.
Yep. Yep.
She's very involved. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. she does great. And, you know, so it's an interesting way for her to get involved because she's sourcing lots of her ideas from her fans and from her followers. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's her approach. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot in the swimwear space, you know, not quite as complex. Well, it actually is very complex, but a lot of the female influencers that I've worked with who've wanted to roll out a swimwear line, and many mm-hmm. have done so very successfully, they know what they want, and mm-hmm. they want to be very involved. Mm-hmm. There are some other brands that, you know, another interesting one that I think people haven't really acknowledged how successful it was Scott Disick and Talentless. And mm-hmm. I don't represent Talentless directly, but I've done a lot of work with some of Scott and some of the individuals involved.
I don't know much about that. Can you talk about that?
Very simple. It is luxury basics, but at an affordable price.
Okay.
So Scott said, hey, I do want to, I think an apparel line makes sense for me. It's not like he visited, you know, he visited some Caribbean island and said, oh my God, I'm so inspired. And I want to create a clothing apparel line, you know, around the taste of that culture, blah, blah, blah. No, mm-hmm. He said, I want to be involved in the apparel world. This is, you know, I do see that some of these luxury basics companies are just charging an insane amount, $500 for a hoodie, $350 for a t-shirt. He's mm-hmm. like, I think that's a little ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Let's find a spot in the market a little bit below that that can still kind of trade off my, you know, how I'm the kind of upmark, that how he associates himself with more luxury products and a little more upstream. Mm-hmm. And they found, once again, a fulfillment partner. They found someone, you know, who knew the apparel game, who had the design capabilities, and, you know, was savvy enough promotion wise to take a lot of that heavy lifting off Scott's plate and not, you know, force him to kind of recalibrate all of his content towards promoting this brand. And it ended up being very successful. I mean, Talentless is doing really well.
Wow.
You know, $200, you know, sweats and hoodies instead of $300, $400, $500, mm-hmm. you know, just undercut the market a little bit. Mm-hmm. Their promotional content's been very fun and strong. I think it's probably helped soften Scott's image a little bit. And he got involved only to a certain extent. And now Talentless is sort of a standalone brand. And I think this is another a key point, in thinking about whether you want to build a brand mm-hmm. that can exist without your presence, or only exist based on
that. Well, that's the big, that's the dream, right? Like all these creators are like, I've talked to so many, well, I want to make sure I want to, you know, even their merch, I want it to be something that, like, even if people weren't fans of mine, that they would want to. And that is like, yep. so hard to do. That is not yep. like I always like kind of placate people. I'm like, oh yeah, totally. And I'm like, yeah, good luck with all that. It's really tough.
Very difficult, but as you see, it can happen sometimes. And I mean, it's about finding the right partners and talented executors. And that's what happened with Scott and Talentless. And, you know, almost has the feel that he's come in as kind of the key brand ambassador or endorser, as opposed to it being his brand. And it works like that. And now it can exist. It can exist without him, you know, without him having to be out there in front of it 24/7.
That's huge.
So Matt, here's what I'm interested in. What do you know about, given your vantage within the industry and your access to all these people that you work with and the clients that you have, what do you know about that none of us know about that you can tell us? Like,
we probably can't tell us.
Like, what kind of things are you seeing that kind of other people aren't, and how can you distill that information into what's going on in the space?
Well, you know, I'd like to believe that I don't necessarily know if some of the things that I'm seeing are, you know, entirely unique. I mean, some of them are things that everyone's aware of, like, you know, what Beach House is doing in a lot of brands or a lot of, you know, accelerators trying to find
Beach House. Beach House is they backed didn't they back Millie Bobby Brown?
They did.
Yeah.
And just some of the principles that some of the companies that are trying to roll out lines backed or supported by creators, those people are now looking, you know, looking for deeper involvement from talent. Understand that, right? So I think that's one trend that you're seeing that is kind of filtering out to the general population. But I think that a lot of the merchandisers are understanding that they don't understand youth crowds. And so they're looking mm-hmm. for more youthful creators to build brands around. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one thing. If I'm to go look at my history of working with talent affiliated brands for the past decade, where, you know, that was even some from a pre-Instagram and certainly pre-TikTok world, mm-hmm. I'd say, you know, one, the formula that I've noticed that seems to be the recipe for success that I think not everyone is aware of is, I think there's three keys. It's one, the celebrity or talent product fit has to make sense. You know, it's got to make sense. So if a fan or customer sees, okay, wait a second, you know, Millie Bobby Brown selling cosmetics. I can remember, you know, what was back with Beach Mint, you had, I think, Justin Timberlake doing home design, interior design and homewares. And everyone's scratching their head like, wait a second, that doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you need that connection to make sense. Two, you need to find the right partner who knows how to execute. That's kind of goes without saying. Mm-hmm. And three, you need commitment. Mm-hmm. I think that's mm-hmm. where most of these brands seem to fail, is mm-hmm. that a lot of creators, a lot of talent, mm-hmm. they believe, or, you know, even if they don't necessarily think this is going to how it's going to work going into it, I think they need to be in it for the long haul. And I'd say that's the factor that success or failure mostly turns on. Even the brands that I mentioned that have now kind of become standalone and can work without a celebrity's involvement day to day or without them being so much the face, I think that a lot of talent goes into brand building thinking that they can, that this is going to be another quote unquote campaign.
Right.
That this is like an endorsement deal. That, you know, a handful of social posts over the course of 3 or even 6 months and going to an appearance or two, that that's going to do it. And then they can just wind up the toy and, you know, wind up the doll and let it run. That's not how it works.
Or I think at least that's so critical. And but I think what you're saying, if I may distill it just even a tad more, is that the good news is that these companies, they're looking, they want to have more creator involvement. But the other side of it is that you need to be committed. You need to really, and you need, so then you need to figure out what you want to build that you love, but you also have to make sure like it matches to a certain extent with what your audience expects.
Absolutely. It's got to be on brand. And once again, a lot of this is time commitment. And what, you know, one of the things that, I'm privy to that a lot of other people aren't. Yeah. It's the, it's how these creators who are, you know, who, how these creators structure their time and how they deal with having such a heavy workload. And people need to factor that in. If you don't have what it takes to dedicate significant time and attention towards a brand over the course of, I mean, I would say no less than 2 years, you might want to think twice.
It's so critical. I actually, I have a presentation when I'm, when, you know, I consult a lot with people that want to work with creators. And one of the slides of my presentation is actually a screenshot I got from a friend who's a manager. She gave me one of her talent sort of like schedules for a week to show them this is their weekly schedule, right?
It's
like
nuts.
This is what they're doing. It's insane. It does not take 1 minute to make a 1 minute video, right? And you need to fit inside of this and make it worth their while. And vice versa, like the creator needs to understand that like this is going to be another job and you have a job already. And so are you willing to put up those extra hours when you're already so busy? So I think these are fantastic insights and I think it's so smart because I think the appetite is there, the opportunity is there, but you've got to have the right partners and you've got to have the right desire and to go forward.
Absolutely, because I've seen it so many times. Someone with a big following, you just kind of you run the basic back of the you know, the napkin numbers and figure, okay, if I can convert this small percentage of followers into customers, okay, great. Look, we have a success on our hands, and it's so instinctual that it should work.
Right.
But look how many of these brands fail. Right.
Are there any fun ones that you've seen? Like, which ones have you worked on? Any ones that have like you've thought like, oh, that would do well, and it failed, or
pretty much everything with Awesomeness TV. Once again, this is not at all disparaging Awesomeness or any of the people, but essentially towards the end of my tenure there, and this is maybe a year and a half after they were sold to DreamWorks. There was definitely a mandate from DreamWorks to get a consumer products division going. They hired, I mean, they went and hired 30, 35 people right off the bat. I mean, this division got stood up very quickly with very seasoned, talented people involved in it. And you're thinking, okay, and they, at that point, Awesomeness had a lot of creators in its network that were, you know, A-list based on the parameters of that era. That's 2014-15. And you know, you would thinking with they were creating ensemble deals. Hey, we're gonna, you know, put six of our a half dozen creators in our network behind a program to sell at Kohl's and do all these pop-ups, and they had a lot of resources. And I think they tried to do way too much too quickly. And I also think it was that vibe of, hey, we're just gonna pound out some, we're gonna pound out some lines here and there. We're gonna, you know, we're gonna get some stuff onto the shelves. It's gonna be in and out over the course of the Christmas season, or it's gonna be very seasonal. And I think, and you know, along with a lot of other things that transpired with Awesomeness, they weren't able to capitalize on, you know, on their timing and their potential. And the division ended up, you know, contracting. It never turned into what they were anticipating. You know, I think a couple of the people involved are now onto some very successful ventures, but they had the talent, but they were trying to, their approach was far too quick hit.
Fascinating. Oh my God. I love that.
Yeah.
Love it. Well, this has been great. Josh, any last questions for Matt?
Yeah. Let me ask you one more, Matt. How much more time do you think we have? I mean, we've all been in this industry for a while, probably 30 plus years of experience between us or more.
Sure.
How long before this is just commonplace and it's not interesting for you to be a guest on the podcast talking about this because everyone's doing it?
That's an interesting question, and it relates to a question I had for a fulfillment partner of a fashion influencer that I was doing a deal for her to partner up with these guys to do a cosmetics line. Mm-hmm. And they've been in business for 25 years. They've sold numerous nine-figure exits around celebrities, you know, from the analog world through the digital, through the analog days, through the digital days. And I asked them, I said, man, how many more lipstick brands can there be? I mean, how many more? And they said, the founders of this company, been doing it for 30 years, said to me, it's never ending. We always think we're about to hit saturation, and we keep on being able to roll out successful brands. The appetite is just, the appetite of the American consumer is just endless. So I think as long as you have a voracious consumer appetite from the American public and the people that follow these creators, you're going to have more opportunity. You continue to have, you know, not infinite opportunities, but significant opportunities to create these brands and to connect with, you know, a fan base on a deeper level and put product in their hands. And, you know, whether or not that continues to be interesting, I'll probably continue to find it interesting as little permutations come along the way. But I do think we've got a pretty we've got an extensive horizon for this to be a worthwhile conversation in the creator community.
That's great. Yeah, super interesting. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much, Matt. Where can everybody find you on all the socials?
Everyone can find me. Everything is Matt Bilinski, MattBilinsky. I'll let Lauren mention whatever her personal feelings are about whatever I'm doing on Instagram. But, you know,
he's very opinionated, often right, sometimes very wrong, but always entertaining. And I highly recommend. He's had a bit of a surge of a following over the COVID.
Had a bit of a surge.
You're about, yeah, what are you? So, last I checked, you were like 11K. What do you got now?
13.4. Beginning of quarantine, I was 5,500. I'm at 13,400 now.
Someone's a bit of an influencer right here. There you go. There you go. Can't wait for your line of lipstick to come out. Thank you, Matt Bilinski. Always a pleasure.
Thanks so much, guys.
Let's do a couple uploads really quickly. First one I'm going to do is Kindred. So Kindred, their goal is to help socially conscious influencers kind of speak with greater authority. So what do? They created this mental health certificate program for influencers. The program, it takes 3 to 4 hours to complete, teaches influencers how to talk more effectively to their audiences about mental health and then increase access to critical resources. I think this is really interesting because for so long, creators have been, people look up to creators for better or worse, right? You become famous in this world. I think the difference is, you know, a lot of these creators are speaking directly to their audience. You know, this is the format where like talking, breaking the fourth wall, it's expected. And so, you know, these kids, you know, have more of a connection to them than maybe like, you know, when we were young and we were connected to like the stars of our day. And so then they end up reaching out to them about their problems. And you know, and a lot of these creators end up like sharing their problems. And I think it's a lot of pressure. And I think the creators that know that they're not authorities about this know that. And some of them sort of speak not out of turn, but they kind of speak in a way that they don't have the authority to speak on. They don't have the know-how. And so,
or they don't even speak at all.
Or they don't speak at all. And I think that like, on the one hand, I don't think that this should give creators any sort of, you know, feeling that they are mental health experts, but would it be nice for them to have some sort of resource to say, hey, you're having this problem, here's a resource that could really help you, and to have that available to them? I think it's really smart because the kids are coming to them regardless of whether or not they have this expertise. And so you might as well give them some sort of playbook to say, hey, you're having these, you know, thoughts, here's this kind of, you know, group that you can go to or whatever. So I like this. I think this is really good.
It's totally cool. And Kindred was started by Ian Schaefer. He's an advertising executive, was the founder of Deep Focus, and started Kindred as a way to bring together creators and influencers, brands, and then altruistic initiatives, and bring all of these people into one room together so they can collaborate and figure out ways to, one, fund these altruistic initiatives, or be able to put some dollars behind them in order to get the message out further. That's where the brands come into play. Also, the brands want to be more altruistic this day and age. I think consumers want to see brands that are more socially responsible too. And then two, to be able to get the influencers and the creators to understand what these initiatives are and be able to speak about them in a way that they feel comfortable speaking about them without alienating their audience along the way. Or to the best of their ability without knowingly alienating their audience along the way or offending people that might be part of these initiatives that they're actually trying to help. And so it was initially going to be this big live event that was going to happen in March, bringing hundreds of these people together with this, having this incredible lineup really planned. Then the pandemic started. They shifted the event to September. It started to become apparent that things weren't going to be better in September. So now they're going to still do the live events at some point in the future, but they've shifted to these online kind of courses. And I think it's a very cool idea. I mean, we see creators now being more vocal than ever before. Logan Paul being a very good example about how him saying it's not enough to not be racist, you have to be anti-racist. I think that was a particularly good example of someone who is surprisingly thoughtful and speaking to their audience in a genuine way about something very important. And I think Kindred basically wants to teach other creators how to do that and how to feel comfortable doing that. And I just really applaud this.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. Any more uploads for you, Josh?
Yeah, one more. So former Style Hall exec Stephanie Horbachewski, CEO of Style Hall as well, raised $10 million to launch content recommendation startup Vody.
Okay, what is this?
I'm glad you asked, Lauren.
Thanks.
Because no one really knows, because it spent 2 years in stealth and it's just been announced now along with this funding announcement where they have Clemens Management and Kacker Capital on board. But according to the release and other articles, Vody processes billions of data points and then creates profiles for titles using emotion-based and other descriptive tags. The off-platform perspective that it provides differs from the way that Netflix and other streamers traditionally compute recommendations, whose suggestions are determined by the on-platform behavior of similar users. So I think it's basically taking off-platform behavior from all these different people, also applying that to on-platform behavior, and then coming up with recommendations.
Weren't you just talking about RTL Group?
I was talking about RTL Group because they were an investor in Style Hall.
Style Hall, and I think they owned it. They owned Style Hall. And Style Hall was an MCN that was focused on beauty, lifestyle, digital media. And that was started by Stephanie. And then I guess she like sold it to RTL Group, as I recall. And then it was completely shuttered March in 2019. I get it's just, you know, here's the truth. This is what this baffles me, because Style Hall was a failure, right? Like, this isn't a judgment on her, but it's just fascinating to me. You have a company, she effectively made a ton of money on this. She succeeded, if that's your definition of success, but the company that she created, not only did it shutter, but it was marred in a lot of controversy. Somebody internally was potentially like, I don't remember the outcome, but they were like embezzling money. I don't know what the deal was. So it just fascinates me. Kids, if you don't think, if you're ever wondering, it just should inspire people. if you create companies, they fall apart. Guess what? You can still raise $10 million for a startup that nobody understands. And I don't know. I find this fascinating. I just do. It's a little, I don't know. I guess it's an upload.
It's interesting for sure. So in 2014, RTL did buy a controlling stake in Style Hall for $107 million that valued the company at $151.4 million. Mm-hmm. Then 4 years later, the company doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And a former Style Hall exec pled guilty to embezzling $22 million of those dollars in November of 2019.
And it wasn't Stephanie, to be fair. But, you know, this person I know worked alongside her.
Right. So right. That brings up lots of questions. I think, you know,
and she left the company only a year before they shuttered. So it's not like she wasn't involved at all once it was purchased.
But also, if you want to look kind of on the other side of this, you're like, look, here's a woman who knows how to raise dough, also knows how to build a big company that's attractive for investors, that obviously is doing something. Mm-hmm. And let's give her another shot because she actually does have a proven track record here. Do you want someone that knows how to handle a 200, 300 person, however many hundreds of people Sile Hall had eventually employed with however many tens of millions of dollars in revenue and brand deals and different
Did she know how to handle that? I know
mechanisms
that work there.
Unclear, but at least she has experience with it.
She has experience with it, and I know, and I'm definitely one to say that you learn more from the failures than you actually do from the successes. But I don't know. I just find this fascinating, and a lot of people are looking for money. I'm all for women. You know, the percentage of women that raising money versus men is abhorrent. It's so small. So like that is amazing. But I just find this interesting. So good for her. Can't wait to really understand what Vodi is. Anything else?
Lauren, I think we did it.
Look at us with all the interviews. Aren't we a big deal now?
For sure we are. And Lauren, I'll see you using Vodi to figure out your recommendations for whatever entertainment offerings you want to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Love an algorithm.
And if not, then we'll see you next week on Planet Upload. Today's show was produced by Lauren Schnipper and me, Joshua Cohen. Original music is by London Bridge. You can check him out on Instagram at London Bridge Music. You should. He's great. Make sure you subscribe to Planet Upload on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. While you're there, give us a rating, leave us a comment too. And if you want to talk to us, hit us up at planetuploadpod@gmail.com. If you like Planet Upload, please recommend it to a friend. If you don't like it, recommend it to an enemy. Thanks for listening to Planet Upload, and we will be back next week.